Halo, Uncle Leko.
My name is Tenjaju.
How are our numbers look? Attendance?
Recording in progress.
Currently, we have 5 members in the platform. We have 2 apologies from Ms. Nita and Mr. Karim, Chair.
Okay. Our stakeholders here.
Yes, Mr. Njadu, we have Ms. Thabisa Nkosi, who is the chairperson of Land Bank, present here, the dedication.
So actually, we are ready to start.
Yes, Mr. Njadu, we can start.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me first use this opportunity to greet all the members. Finance Committee, and also our stakeholder today, Land Bank, and to welcome you all. And Kuleleko, can we then formally, as the meeting is declared open, formally deal with the apologies?
Yes, Mr. Njatu. We have 2 apologies before us, Mr. Njatu. The apology of Mr. Karim and the apology of Ms. Nwita. Thanks a lot, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think this meeting is scheduled for 10 to 1, but we can still, if we be very specific on our presentation and our engagement as from the members, that we not going to delay any time, and then immediately then give to Land Bank to brief the committee. Can we welcome Land Bank?
Good morning, Honorable Chair. And good morning, honorable members. I hope that everyone can hear me clearly. My name is Thabi Nkosi. I am the chairman of the Land Bank Board. Thank you very much, Chair, for giving us an opportunity to engage with the committee this morning on issues that are quite critical to the Land Bank's sustainability and stability. Before I start our presentation, which we have prepared and circulated to members, let me introduce members of the Land Bank's delegation with us this morning, starting with Mr. Themba Rikhotso, who is the bank's new Chief Executive Officer. He commenced his duties on the 1st of April of this year. Mr. Rikhotso is just briefly about the new CEO. He is a seasoned banker with over 20 years of experience in the financial services sector. He's also a very seasoned executive manager, having managed very complex teams across multiple jurisdictions and product services. He also has experience in the field of agricultural financing, having worked for Rabobank in Australia and New Zealand. And of course, Rabobank is one of the world's leading agricultural financiers. We're quite excited, honorable members, to have Mr. Rikhotso on board. His proven execution capacity, as well as his innovative approach to financing, will really accelerate our efforts in restructuring the entity. We've set a number of priorities and have clarified our expectations as a board with Mr. Rikhotso. One of his first priorities, of course, completing the debt restructuring of the entity. He is also seized with ensuring that we strengthen our organizational capacity, improve our risk management, and strengthen our client value proposition in the sector. We are also joined by Ms. Kensani Mukari, who is the bank's Chief Financial Officer, as well as Mr. Sydney Soundy, who is the Executive Head of Strategy and Communications within the Land Bank. I'm also joined by members of the Land Bank Board. Firstly, Ms. Matane Makgato, who is the Chairperson of our Credit and Investment Committee, We're also joined by Ms. Michelle Pillay, who is the chairperson of our Audit and Finance Committee. We're also joined by Professor Johan Kirsten, who is on our board and is a distinguished professor of agriculture and economics, conducting over the years, he's conducted a lot of research on the land bank, looking at the transition of the entity from a funding perspective over the years. And if time allows, Honorable Chair, I think it may be helpful for Prof. Kirsten to provide his insights on the land bank's funding model through the perspective of a professor that has studied this over the years. So we will allow that if with your indulgence at the end of the presentation. Sydney, can we start the presentation, please?
Thank you very much, Tabi. You are welcome, and thank you very much for the introduction. It's a full team, and we greatly appreciate that. And thank you very much. You're welcome to proceed.
Thank you very much, Chair. We're just waiting for our presentation to be loaded. Sydney?
If the host can please enable sharing.
You can share with the sound.
Okay, there we go.
Thank you very much, Sydney. If you can scroll to the next slide, please. Slide two, please. Chairperson, we have circulated a copy of this presentation and we intend to cover quite a number of areas this morning, given the request that was provided to us by the committee. These are areas that we feel that we need to bring to the attention of the honourable members. And we will just be going through these areas. We have switched the sequencing of one or two slides across the presentation just to allow for better flow, but all the content is as provided to members. Next slide, please, Sydney. Can you put it in presentation mode? Thank you. Next slide. Chairperson, we were requested this morning to provide an update on a number of areas that we raised in the quarterly report in our last engagement with the committee. We've also been requested to provide an update on our thinking with respect to the bank's loan funding model and the financial sustainability of the bank. In our last engagement with the committee, a number of actions were agreed, including written responses to questions which we have provided. So we are hoping that in this meeting, we will really provide pick up from where we left off and provide an update of what has happened since the last time we engaged. Thank you, Sydney. So members, since the last time we engaged, quite a number of initiatives have been on the go within the entity. Members will be aware that in 2020 and 2021, the land bank faced significant challenges. Not only had the entity defaulted on its debt, all lending activities had halted within the entity. Client and staff attrition was at an all-time high. The Auditor General had raised significant concerns about internal controls and governance. And so there were a number of pressing issues that we had to deal with when we started as a new board. We've been quite active in terms of putting together a number of initiatives.
May I interrupt?
Yes, Chair.
May I interrupt?
Yes, Chair.
May I interrupt, Tabi?
Yes, Chair.
Yes, I don't know whether it's on my side or is it my side or don't know whether it's something with the network, but I'm in and out.
We can hear perfectly, Chair.
I'm hearing clearly. Thank you, Chair.
We are fine, Chairperson. We can hear.
Pambili.
Perhaps, Chair, it's on your side. It looks like the other.
No, maybe continue. I will call him.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. So From a financial perspective, we continue to operate under a state of default. We have, however, managed to quarantine, if you will, the challenges on the balance sheet from the rest of the operations. And to a large extent, we have resumed operations as normal while we deal with our lenders in terms of restructuring the balance sheet. So unlike what we had before, where the state of default was affecting the entire organization, we have managed to contain that to the balance sheet and have largely managed to make progress across the business. We've also maintained a solvent and a solvent business, and our liquidity position remains healthy. This the Chief Financial Officer will go into more detail on in the presentation. We've also continued to collect on our scheduled loan repayments and to recover from defaulting customers. This, of course, honorable members, is very, very important for us as the Land Bank, because if we are unable to recoup the funds that have been lent out to clients, we are unable to effectively execute our mandate. Secondly, in our last engagement with the committee, we indicated that we had an exercise on the go to insource the loan book that had been previously managed by intermediaries. This process has largely been completed and has really allowed us to strengthen governance over the loan portfolio and to really improve credit management across this insourced portfolio. We have also, thirdly, resumed our lending activities across the commercial and the development space. We, as part of our development offering, launched our blended finance scheme in October of 2020. This was a 2 billion rand scheme to be deployed, with capital to be deployed over the next 3 years in collaboration with the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Sydney Soundy, in his portion of the presentation, will take us through our progress in terms of this program and what we have approved and the challenges that we may be experiencing in terms of our execution. We have also, members, continued to repay the lenders from our side. Since the state of default, we have reduced our funding liabilities by about 45%. We are currently finalizing an additional capital repayment to lenders, which will significantly reduce the outstanding debt. And this is all while negotiating with our lenders. This is quite a significant feat for an entity in default to really be this diligent in terms of repaying its lenders to this extent. We've also, honorable members, noted with concern when we started the significant reputational damage that the organization had been through. And we've put together very targeted reputation management strategies. We've been quite proactive in terms of engaging with sector stakeholders, engaging with farmers, and this has really started to bear fruit. Next slide, please, Sydney. This next slide. Thank you. From an audit perspective, members will recall that in the financial year 2020, the bank had been given a disclaimed audit opinion by the Auditor General. This was followed by a qualified audit opinion by the Auditor General in 2021. Following these concerns raised by the Auditor General, the bank put together a very rigorous remediation plan, and this resulted in the clean audit that we achieved in the financial year that has just passed, the financial year 2022. From a leadership stability point of view, as I indicated, we now have a very competent team of executives in permanent capacities. We have a permanent CEO, a permanent CFO, permanent head of risk, and we have permanently capacitated our treasury team, which is crucial in our financial restructuring. We also, honorable members, continue to implement targeted employee retention strategies. The past 2 years have been incredibly challenging for the employees of the Land Bank. We continue to rebuild organizational capacity. We are also undergoing an exercise to redesign the structure of the Land Bank to ensure that it is fit for purpose and in line with the new strategy that we are undertaking. Lastly, honorable members, the last thing I'd like to bring to your attention is that in the last engagement that we had with the committee, we indicated that there were a number of areas or a number of transactions that had given us cause for concern. as the board. We also indicated that we had prioritized resolving outstanding instances of confirmed or potential misconduct that had led to the bank's current position. In prioritizing this area, we established a board-level accountability and consequence management task team. And this task team was given the responsibility of assessing the status of investigations, gathering data, and prioritizing matters for recommendation on the way forward to the board and to the National Treasury. Now, one of the biggest concerns that this task team and the board identified was the deterioration in the land bank's loan book. This has been widely reported. Now, this deterioration of the loan book, which is evidenced in the high non-performing loan ratio that you will see later in the presentation, has significantly compromised our ability to timeously conclude our debt restructuring. We have also seen significant value destruction in the entity given the this performance of the loan book. So just to deal with these issues, we have requested the assistance of the National Treasury in conducting a forensic investigation, focusing on a number of transactions and loans that were granted and managed by our previous SLA partners on our behalf. We are also currently in the process of a number of investigations, both internally and externally, to deal with the allegations that have been raised in the market regarding our loans collection process and other areas of concern. And this is really, honorable members, in an effort to ensure that we not only clean house from an audit perspective, but we ensure that these instances of potential misconduct are fully dealt with, that we can really say that we are running a clean operation, not just from an audit perspective, but also within our operations. With that, honorable members, let me hand over to our new CEO, who will provide us with an update of the liability solution, and that is in essence our debt restructuring. He will be followed by Mr. Sydney Soundy, who will give us an update on the Land Bank's new strategy. Ms. Kensani Mukari will update us on financial performance within the entity. And lastly, as indicated, I will request Professor Kirsten to wrap up and provide his insights on this. I do request that my colleagues keep their comments brief.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hi. Hello, Chairperson. Okay. A very good morning.
Yes.
May I proceed, sir?
So you are welcome. Thank you very much. You may proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. A very good morning, Chairperson, and all honorable members. I'm quite excited to come and share our updates with this committee. I'm going to take you through the liability solution a bit. Perhaps it may be important just to touch a little bit on the event of default. You will recall, honorable members, that in April 2020, as the chair has indicated, the land bank defaulted on some of our payment obligations. This default triggered what we call a cross-default event, which meant that all our borrowings actually were defaulted. It meant that we actually had to suspend the payments of interest and capital to all our lenders. What then happened was that all of our lenders at Land Bank actually adopted what we call a standstill, which was actually quite helpful for us with the standstill in that they chose not to immediately recall the facilities, but to actually work with us in finding a solution. However, one of the lenders decided to immediately call for the repayment of their facility. That particular lender has actually been paid. Following this event of default, Land Bank started in May 2022 to start having the debt restructure process with all the lenders. We have since had about three versions of the debt restructuring solution.
Okay.
We have since had three versions of this debt restructure. We call it a liability solution. However, all these three versions were rejected by lenders.
There were certain elements of it that they were not happy with. And now we have started what we call the fourth liability solution, which is the current negotiation we are having with the lenders. When it comes to National Treasury, they've been extremely supportive to us throughout this process, which really started in June 2020. National Treasury injected about 3 billion worth of equity into us to really help us stabilize our financial situation. That allowed us to start the repayments of the interest that were in arrears and also started making the repayments of the interest and all the capital. You recall, honorable members, that following that first equity injection, we also had another 7 billion that was announced in February 2021 of another further recapitalization by National Treasury. Sinivi, may go to the next slide, please. Yeah, so when it comes to the liability solution itself, this has been a very, very complex process for us. You may recall that we have said we have over 60 lenders into Land Bank. These over 60 lenders, they come from different countries. They've given us different forms of instruments, and these instruments have different maturities. So what we have been doing with them was to try and reach an acceptable liability solution which will allow us to convert all these different instruments into a single instrument, which will have a defined payment agreement with all the lenders. The restructuring process has been very, very complicated in that some of these lenders, as you may expect it, really adopted a very, very difficult stance. At the same time, we had to have very extensive conversation with National Treasury, the Minister of Finance, and also the International Development Finance Institutions to try and find a solution with regards to some of the guaranteed facilities that also carry the government guarantee on it. As you know, this may have some implications on the sovereign risk. So we had to really make sure there is an alignment with National Treasury on that. Again, on the support from National Treasury, given the progress that we have made with the negotiation, given the complexity of this restructuring process, and also the fact that our environment has actually improved quite a lot, both from operational and financial perspective, National Treasury has agreed to release the remaining equity injection as at end of March last month. They received the remaining 5 billion, which we have since received. We are very thankful to National Treasury for their consideration. These funds have actually been put into a secured and ring-fenced account. This was to ensure that both ourselves and any other person couldn't really have access into these funds while we are negotiating for these liability solutions, and also while we're waiting for some of the conditions that have been set by National Treasury to be fulfilled. Next slide, Sydney. Next slide, please.
Slide 10.
Okay. While waiting for the slides, maybe to ensure I don't waste time, I will just continue talking. The slide will find me. So the next part, I wanted to just give an update on some of the capital reductions that have taken place. The chairperson has indicated that we have since paid about 45% of the original outstanding amount. That 45% paid amount to about 18.1 billion. And this was paid through four different capital repayments events that took place between 2021 and 2022. We are now considering doing the fifth capital repayments, and we have started some consideration and discussion with the lenders to try and get ourselves ready to make the fifth capital reduction. At the same time, National Treasury has again come to the party and they have committed to pay all the guaranteed lenders. We still have about 890 million outstanding from the guaranteed lenders. National Treasury has started together with ourselves the discussions with the guaranteed lenders to try and make the settlement of this last installment to the guaranteed lenders within the next couple of months as well. If you look at where we are now with the liability solutions, we have made a significant amount of progress with all the lenders in negotiating for an acceptable liability solution with all the flows in finding an acceptable solution with all of them. We're having some discussions with National Treasury to also agree on some critical matters that requires us to align with National Treasury. So we believe that very soon we should have something that our lenders should accept, and we will get to sign this liability solution. The chairperson has already indicated that the bank remains very solvent, and our current liquidity is very, very healthy at the moment. The other part which the chair touched on is that we have since restarted our mandate, which is extending financing solutions to our clients. We are working with our existing clients to start financing them, and similarly, we are making a great amount of progress on the blended finance solution, and we will share more details on this. So the next step with regards to the liability solutions will be to finalize the term sheet. We've already started discussions with the National Treasury, and we will then conclude with signing the liability solutions with all the lenders. And we hope that that will happen very, very soon. I will pause here and allow my colleagues to go through the next slide. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. The next presenter is welcome.
Thank you. It's Sydney Soundy here. I hope you can hear me very well. So in terms of the strategy, the board set and reviewed what the purpose of its existence is, and ensured that the strategy does actually cover those elements that are in the purpose of our existence. And importantly, to translate them into something that is meaningful in as far as the stakeholders can appropriately interpret what the expectation of the bank is. And so this is why you'll see from the value proposition that the bank's focus is closing a critical market gap. The elements that we have defined that we essentially need to close as a gap is what we've come to realize in the market, that there is a gap in as far as affordable financing for agriculture, particularly at the entry and developmental level. We also realize that there are issues of equity challenges, and many of the entrants in this market do not have the level of collateral that would otherwise be required. So essentially, one of the critical elements of our value proposition is to ensure those elements are appropriately attended to. Thus, the issues such as the blended finance are a major component of our strategy going. What we've also experienced as the chair indicated generally around the challenges of the clients is that there hasn't been appropriate support across the ecosystem as far as assisting lenders or other producers and clients with business planning, the ability to assess and provide a proper viable proposition or project that the bank can finance, to look at issues of offtake agreement upfront in terms of market access. But also once finance has been provided, that there's sufficient technical support for clients. So essentially, because of that gap that we see, the bank needs to play a facilitative role in the ecosystem to provide those elements, which will also de-risk the funds that we deploy into the sector. Because of the essential element of our targeted developmental activities and outcomes, we also align ourselves to the priorities of the policy department. And in this instance, in particular, to ensure that we focus on high socioeconomic impact commodities, because those would give us the results that are essential in as far as ensuring that there's appropriate creation of jobs, that food security is protected, and get issues of environmental stewardship as critical going forward. So when you look at this, what we're saying in one page is what the bank's purpose of existence is and what needs to then be translated into the business operation that provides us with the outcomes we've initiated in this month, some of which include the level of mix that our book should look like into the future. We currently have a very modest percentage of development portfolio in the book. We want to drive that to the 50% at least by 28, financial year 28, and grow the number of farmers that we support as well. Critical is that we need to deliver all of these developmental effectiveness outcomes with financial sustainability in mind. We have to balance the ability to deliver these outcomes with financial sustainability. That's the issues of the finance funding model, the quality of the book, and how we grow and diversify revenues as well as containing costs is an important aspect of our strategy. We realize where the bank is currently, and that it's not going to take a short period of time to get ourselves to the desired state. So that's why the board has been specific in ensuring that the focus is phased, that we understand what needs to be done in the earlier part of the turnaround strategy, which is the stabilization phase, and how we consolidate before the growth element is actually realized. It doesn't mean, Chairperson and members, that the work to grow the book cannot start now. So in this one page, you can see the specific you can see the specific focus area, address the issue of concluding the liability solution in the current financial year. We have already started the process of blended finance, and I'll share with you some of the progress we've made thus far. The chair has spoken about us building the appropriate capacity and capability of the organization. The funding model issue has been addressed. So our focus currently is to finalize the business case for the post-funding model. We've engaged with National Treasury, and they've indicated to us what elements of considerations we should take into account. We do have ideas that the board has generated, but we need to translate them into firm business case such that as we engage with National Treasury and other stakeholders, there are some firm recommendations relating to this aspect. And so you'll see that across the phases, with the years that we've indicated, the issues of the quality of the book, the embedment of the ecosystem in terms of the issues that I have raised of facilitating and ensuring pre and post support service, growth of our revenues and diversification thereof, the risk management aspect, that those elements start now and they are undertaken throughout the period of our turnaround. So they are fundamental in that instance. What we've also indicated is that at the time when the liability solution is coming to a conclusion, so we've agreed on the liability solution and we are at the period of repaying our debt, that towards the end of that repayment period, there will be a need for us to start refinancing those in order to scale up the growth of our business. So this in one page, Chair and members, is an indication of our strategic focus area. The Chair has also indicated that we are now very clear in terms of the value proposition for the different parts of our market. And what we indicated here is that we're focusing largely on growing up the small and medium scale farmers, as well attending to the needs of our large farmers as well as corporate plants. But what is specific with this particular slide is that with a small and medium sized entrant in the market or producers that are already in existence but who want to scale up, that our focus is likely on providing affordable and long dated financing. This element here of pre and post support is critical to this level of the focus in as far as this market is concerned. As we move to the large category, that's where our focus is on increasing the production capacity of these new entrants in the market. And then the corporate side, our focus is actually to finance historically disadvantaged persons into taking ownership in these corporate entities to aid their transformation. So we're very specific in terms of how that value proposition that I also covered in the previous slide is going to be addressed as segment. Let me briefly give an update of the pipeline in terms of the blended findings. You'll see that what we currently have in the assessment pipeline is 1.3 billion worth of applications. We've already processed approvals out of this pipeline transaction, and that amounts to 181 million made up of 20 clients. You also see this spread in terms of commodities. And obviously, as we build up this portfolio, the level of commodity balancing and mix will also come into effect. But progress is being made, Chair members, given that we build sufficient pipeline that we'll see us getting approvals and investment into the next year. What you see on this slide is our indication of what the development effectiveness outcomes look like for those transactions that we have so far approved. And you'll see that the levels of number of jobs that are created, the element of inclusion of youth and female in the sector. There was a question, Chair, from the committee around development indicator framework that is progressing very well. And although we haven't got to a stage where all of these are captured at farm level, automated, we are close to that. Progress is being made to get there. And whilst we do that, we still have the ability to record, as you see from this slide, degree of development, effectiveness, outcomes of the work that we're doing in this regard. Chair, I'll proceed to deal with the funding model issues in terms of how the board looks at this. The chair speak about Professor Kirsten giving us some details of the historical work that he has done. What I want to do with this slide, chair and members, is to provide an indication of how the land bank of old was actually funded. When you look at the slide, taking into account the land bank's long-term loan book in the period 1967 to 1980, you will see the level of sources of funds that were made up of state capital and reserves, and with debt or the debentures of about 15 billion. So in relation to the sources of funds, essentially it was close to 50% of state capital and debt from the market to service the development of agriculture, ensuring in terms of the type of mix that we had, the affordability of financing is progressed. The long-term nature of financing acquisition of property is attended to, whilst the bank is at an appropriate gearing level. What we see going forward, Chair, is with the capital injection that Temba has spoken about, there's 3.7 billion of that allocation that is going to be deployed to grow our blended finance book. Lenders have been very collaborative with us and allowed us to utilize cash in the meantime, cash that we've collected, which would necessarily have to be paid to lenders. They've consented to us deploying those funds into the blended funding scheme. And as the chair indicated with the department, we've then blended that with grants so that financing is affordable to the development and transformational clients, Chair. So with that 3.7 billion, when it does come through, once the liability solution is concluded, this is how we focus that it will be deployed to grow blended finance book. But we will deplete that 3.7 billion in terms of forecast by the end of 26, financial year 26, meaning that there will be a need going forward to find further funds if we want to continue with the growth of this book, which has so much potential for the development effectiveness and contribution to economic growth in the country. So this is an indication, Chair, that going forward, the funding model will also have to deal with this aspect. So essentially, we want to ensure that there's a balance, the mix of funds that the bank utilizes to deploy into the sector. The reason why we need that balance, particularly to increase the element of capital injection going forward, is in order to deal with the aspects of the research too. And essentially the problem statement that we see that needs to be resolved in order for us to achieve both developmental effectiveness and financial sustainability is largely around how we sort out the funding model and enable ourselves to provide long-dated facilities it means that we have to get long-dated type of funding. We also need to deal with the fact that currently funding that comes from the capital market and the debt market is quite expensive. And as such, that element also needs to be resolved. We've spoken about the fact that we're dealing with a business case, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time here. But I thought it's important that we give you an indication that we have already thought through the principles that we believe need to be deployed into a solution as we go into quantification of the business case. I initially spoke about how we have segmented our market. So as it were, when you look at this, we think that it's important that we procure funding that is fit for purpose with regard to the various target markets that we've looked at. And so when you look at this in AMBA, we're saying that for the type of financing that we need to do for small and medium scale firms, the type of funds that would require are largely those that are of a nature of injection, similar to what you saw with the slide that dealt with a cow perspective. And as you go to the large side, you can start mixing that with debt as well as with DFI or debt. So in other words, debt that relates to the possibility to get long-dated funding there. We have previously had a good fund structure with the World Bank. So those are typically the types of funds that we think should be deployed in that category. And then as you go into the bigger corporates, even the normal commercial debt, together with equity can be mixed. So essentially, that's how we look at this. When you look at the right-hand side where we talk of off-balance sheet, the blended finance scheme that we're currently deploying has boosted grants that we have procured and with the support of the Department of Agriculture. And so those grants are deployed at the client level. They are not in our balance sheet, but they de-risk the transaction and make it much more affordable for clients. And so that will continue to be our fundamental focus in order to ensure that, as we indicated, what we need to deliver the gap is appropriate for. So that's that. I'll pass on now to our CFO, Sani, to deal with the financial sustainability piece.
Thanks, Sydney. Good morning, Chair, honorable members, and everybody on the call. With your permission, Chair, I'm struggling with connectivity, so I'm going to switch off my video to make sure that I'm able to proceed speedily. So in terms of the financial sustainability aspect of the bank, I think the context has largely been covered by previous speakers, Chair. So I'll go through it very quickly. So despite the bank operating in a state of default since April 2020, Chair, we have seen that the stabilization efforts that have been implemented have yielded positive results. We have paid 18.1 billion of debt to date since default, and we continue to service interest payments. We continue to support existing customers, and as Sydney mentioned, we have resumed origination, including the newly launched blended finance scheme, which is in collaboration with the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. Over 98% of the loan book that was previously managed by intermediary partners, also known as SLAs, has been successfully insourced. And the board chair has also alluded to the improved controls and credit management around the book as a result. Some of the aspects that we continue to address, Chair, to ensure the bank's ability to fully operate in a sustainable manner that we are still busy negotiating with lenders their debt restructuring process. I'm not going to go into it in detail. I think the CEO has covered that. The bank continues to rely mainly on collections and settlements to sustain our operational activities, as it is unable to raise funding at this time. And this, of course, as previous speakers have alluded to, has curtailed the disbursement support into the sector. We've got 3.7 billion that's of the appropriated funds that's earmarked to support the development sector. And it will go a long way, but as Sydney mentioned, it will run out by 2026. Next slide, Sydney. The NPL remediation program, Chair, again, has been spoken about quite a bit, is starting to bear fruit. And that was really introduced or implemented to address the changing profile of the loan book resulting from customer migration and to make sure that we're able to collect on our debt. We have seen that net interest margins are starting to show an improvement as we continue to reduce debt. That results in decreased interest payments that we need to make. And the bank is also looking into ways to diversify its revenues, of course, operating within its mandate, as we currently rely mainly on one revenue stream in the form of interest income. We're also seeing, next slide, Sydney, we're also seeing improved audit outcomes, Chair, and I think this again has been spoken about quite a bit. I think the board chair in the introduction spoke about this as well. So we moved from a disclaimed audit opinion to a clean audit over a period of 3 years. Moving to the financial performance itself, Chair, what we've done is we're providing an update up to February 2023 year to date. These are unaudited numbers. We're still busy with the March numbers, which is essentially our year-end numbers. That's why we haven't provided same. We're still in progress. We've also provided our budget just to show, to give the committee an indication of where the bank is going despite the challenges that we're facing. So looking at the net interest margin, Chair, we're starting to see an improvement as I have highlighted. If you look at the trend, you'll see that the past 2 years, it was largely clean up, and that's why there's a bit of volatility. And then it starts to stabilize. Going into the budget, as we start to roll out the blended finance scheme and origination in general, we see our net interest margin increasing combined with a decrease in our funding liabilities, which means that we pay less interest, Chair. Our credit impairments, again, we went through a cleanup process largely in 2020-2021. And then 2022, as the attrition of the loan book accelerated, we started seeing releases, and that's what you're seeing there in the financials. And that continues into at a reduced, much reduced rate into future years, Chair, until 2026, when we start seeing impairment charges as the book starts to stabilize and we continue to originate. Our operating expenses follows the same trend, whereby you see the past three financial years, which is actually 2021, 22, and 23, the bank had to tighten up a bit since default. And we had put a lot of initiatives on hold as the bank was striving to stabilize itself. When you look at the budget, you can see that the bank is starting to rebuild. And I think the chair indicated that, you know, we're rebuilding and strengthening organizational capacity. and you start to see some of the expenses increasing, Chair. So that's really rebuilding to enable execution of the mandate. In terms of the profit, we've seen a huge improvement in the bank from 2020, where we were sitting with about 1.6 billion in losses, through to where we are today, where we're expecting some profit. As at end of Feb, it was sitting at 703 million, and that we expect that to carry through to year end. And then you see the profits reducing as the bank starts to, you know, to stabilize at least the financial performance. We have built significant cash reserves, and I mean the CEO did mention that we're looking to make another capital reduction. It's off the cash reserves that we've built. The loans and advances, we have indicated that we've seen attrition or a decreasing loan book, and that is carrying through. And you see towards 2025, 2026, it starts to again to stabilize as we the origination picks up. Funding liabilities, you see a reduction starting 2020, we're sitting at, so that's the period when we defaulted, we're sitting at 31 billion. We've made capital reductions as at end of Feb, we're sitting at 24 billion, and we expect that to is as repay the debt. And all of this, Chair, is actually captured in the key ratios, where you see the interest margin starting to improve. The cost to income ratio is also showing a significant improvement. We have a bit of a challenge in the non-performing loans, but I'll cover it shortly. And then the solvency of the bank, which I think in terms of financial sustainability is a key indicator. It's showing significant improvement over the years, Chair. Next slide, Sydney. Talking about the non-performing loans, what we see. So we've got the two graphs is really showing, the one on the left, on the right is showing where we were. We closed the financial year in March 2022. And then the one on the left shows end of year to date, end of Feb. And what you see there is essentially that the loan book continues to decline. However, the profile of the book is changing, and you see the non-performing loan ratio overall increasing from 48% to 53%. And that really is that it is as a result of the fact that the better performing book has decreased faster than the non-performing loan book. What we, however, see is that when one looks at the nominal numbers, Chair, as a result of the NPL remediation program that has been implemented by the bank, we're seeing a massive improvement. So the non-performing loans, which is really the bad book, has decreased from 12.3 billion in March 2022 to 10.3 billion in Feb 2023, and we expect a further decrease to year end. So the remediation strategy on the non-performing loan book is definitely bearing some results, Chair. And so next slide, Sydney. In conclusion, Chair, on the financial sustainability aspect, since the event of default, we've seen the loan book declining significantly, and that, of course, has an impact on the bank's revenue. The bank has, however, commenced origination driven largely by the blended finance scheme, and I think we've seen that the impact of that on the previous slide that showed the financial performance and the budget. The bank is working on an appropriate funding model, and Sydney has covered that in some detail. to ensure that it balances the provision of affordable loans to emerging farmers with financial sustainability of the bank. The NPL remediation program, and I've just spoken to the benefits thereof, that has been implemented by the bank, continues, and we hope to continue to see more loans being remediated as a result. We continue to manage our operating expenses in as much as the budget is showing increases that are well considered, and it's to really rebuild the organization. In terms of the management controls, the internal management controls, the remediation, the audit remediation program that was initiated, the board chair spoke to that in her introduction, continues in order to make sure that the improved controls are bedded down, and we continue with the in audit. And in terms of conclusion and next steps, we really, it's the continued implementation, and that's really of the key focus areas as to the bank's strategic plan, and Sydney has gone through that in detail, Chair. And also to conclude the business case for development, effectiveness, and sustainability, and incorporated in that is the funding model of the organization. I'll pause here. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Kansani. Honourable members, as requested, I would like to, in the last 5 minutes of this presentation, give Professor Kirsty an opportunity to share his insights with members. I think this will be quite helpful as we collectively discuss the appropriate funding model for the Land Bank. So, Professor, if you can, in 5 minutes, perhaps give brief highlights of your findings and research.
Thank you, Chair. Just to put all those discussed here today in context, the Land Bank is a state bank. It is a state bank with a development mandate. It has always been a development finance institution, and the principles of a development finance institution is to on-lend to clients at rates that are more preferential than the commercial world. So typically you would like to have longer term loans. You would like to have lower interest and better terms, so that access to finance is improved. So a fundamental part of that is, as a bank, you need to borrow money to on-lend to clients. The commercial banks have the luxury to borrow money from depositors mainly, or from the Reserve Bank. The Land Bank borrows in the commercial world and then on-lend to clients, and then have to cover the cost. So as a result, the cost of funding is very expensive for new entrants, for our development mandate. So our funding model is incomplete and incorrect for the purposes of the bank. If you go back into history and the table that Sydney showed earlier, we can clearly see the considerable appropriation done by Parliament to capitalize the Land Bank, whereby the Land Bank could on-lend money at much cheaper rates than commercial banks. And that made it possible for white farmers to get established, to grow, etc. So the role of the Land Bank since 1912 was based on a capital base of the state at zero cost. And with a 2 or 3% margin, you can cover your operating costs and still get into the market at below prime, which is conducive for agriculture, but also conducive for the mandate of development. So since 2002, when the new act kicked in, the previous executives of the Land Bank made several mistakes in the context of competing with the commercial bank by increasing the interest rates overnight, by also transforming from a simple interest rate to a compound interest rate, which made life more expensive for farmers itself. So it's interesting and very concerning to me as one that observed the history of the Land Bank over years to see that as we wanted to bring in new participants in the agriculture sector, we made life difficult for them through more expensive finance. And I think this is the key issue that the board has resolved to turn around now, to ensure that we go back to what the role of the Land Bank has been, to have long-term products with cheaper finance but remain sustainable to cover our operating costs. So in short, this is what the vision is and why we should look back at history and see what has the bank done for agriculture over the years and take those lessons forward as we solve our current liability problem, our current liability solution, and then move into a sensible development finance institution on behalf of the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor, and thank you very much, Honourable Chair and members. That is our story. In essence, we're saying that since the state of default, made a lot of progress. We have transitioned our strategy. We have received great assistance from the National Treasury. We do, however, remain constrained in terms of many of the initiatives that we would like to undertake, particularly in assisting new farmers. And this is largely because of the funding model. As we indicated, we continue engagements with the National Treasury on this and would really value the committee's insights as we continue to restructure and stabilize the entity. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much to the Land Bank team for the detailed presentations to the committee. And we will now look at the engagement from the members on the presentations. The presentations are a number of presentations, so the members will engage on any presentation and then we'll take it from there. I see Honorable Okamp, Honorable Ryder, Honorable Tetweit. Honorable Okamp, Honorable Ryder, Honorable Tetweit. Are there any other hands? Okay, if not.
I see Honorable Mashangu Chair as well.
Honorable Mashangu. Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Those are the four hands that we have. Start with Honorable Okamp.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you to Land Bank for the presentations. I've got quite a few questions with regards to the non-performing loans and several other aspects. The non-performing loans increased from 2020, where it was 23%, 2021, 32.5%, 2022, 48%, actually 47.7%. And now in 2023 at 53%. That is worrying if we look at what happened with Land Bank over the past few years and how they moved their funding to lenders away from commercial farmers that had the capacity to pay loans. In the document of the researchers, they said that members previously noted that the bank moved the defaulting customers to a commercial bank and turned away 50% of paying customers to support transformation, meaning a loss of clients. Now, in any banking model, it will always be good to keep your clients that are able to pay you back instead of getting rid of them. That is a worrying factor, and I would like to have the comments of that. We must also in South Africa look at the problems that was experienced in the agriculture industry over the past few years. We, apart from the macroeconomic circumstances in the country deteriorating and apart from COVID, we had droughts in big parts of this country that had a huge effect on the ability of farmers to pay back their loans. In a lot of areas, those droughts ended. And circumstances are now in the last almost a year better for those farmers to farm. But what we've seen is actions being taken by Land Bank. I have written questions that were submitted to the Minister of Agriculture and answers were given with regards to what Land Bank are doing in order to help those farmers. But what we see in reality on the ground and what we saw in the media is an actual heavy-handedness from attorneys, from liquidators, in just steamrolling forward in trying to get those farms liquidated as soon as possible. Land Bank has been in the news in the last 7-8 months frequently with regards to actions taken by attorneys or by liquidators. So my question is, firstly, what is Land Bank actually doing with regards to helping farmers that due to droughts, due to locust problems, due to the ongoing deterioration of macroeconomic problems in South Africa, are now in a better position to pay their loans back, especially those farms on which legal action has already been instituted? Because what it seems to me is that the moment that legal action is instituted and then it's handed over to the attorneys or to the liquidators, Land Bank stands back and the liquidators carries on and they try to get this thing to an auction as soon as possible to get the land sold off. Now, that brings you to the question. That's a lot of legal costs that's being incurred. We see applications from lenders counter applications from the liquidators, etc. And there's legal cost incurring all of the time. Now, that legal cost is firstly covered from anything that is sold on an auction. So I would like to get an answer on what is the exact percentage of outstanding loans that eventually comes to Land Bank after auctions have been held, after all the attorney fees and liquidator fees, etc., have been paid. Because it seems to me in a lot of instances that, and it happens all over the legal profession, that people can drive up costs because they know I've got this farm of 20 million rands that must go in an auction, and whatever legal fees that is incurred in the battle to get that farm on that auction will be deducted from the price. So what is the actual percentage of money of the valuation of a farm that the Land Bank gets in after all these legal battles was done? What progress was made in addressing your funding issues? Were there any engagements with National Treasury on the feasibility of annual fiscal transfers from the government to support the transformation agenda? We hear a lot about the transformation agenda. And again, that brings you back to the question of turning away clients that are able to pay or driving them to other financial institutions because they can get better rates or better treatment there. And then having the loaners or lenders on your book that are not in a position to pay back their money. Chairperson, we hear a lot of talk about the non-performance loan remediation plan. Now, that remediation plan can't only be to get lawyers to zoom in on people that's not paying and to get those farms and those entities or companies that owns the farming entities, get them liquidated as soon as possible in order to get money in. The purpose of Land Bank is to assist those farmers. And what we've seen over the last year, especially when the circumstances became better, is that there was not a real efforts from Land Bank to assist those farmers that defaulted on their loans, but now can pay back their loans, especially in the instances where it has already been handed over to attorneys to carry on with the liquidation process. So I would like to specifically find out in the instances where liquidation processes have already started a year or so ago, what has Land Bank done in those instances to try and get that farmer back on his feet that is now in a better position to pay back his loan? And another worrying factor, and I mentioned this in my declaration when I did the declaration on the vote of National Treasury, is that it will be futile to keep on providing bailouts to Land Bank without ensuring that there are proper structural reform taking place in Land Bank to secure long-term succession plans and to have long-term loans coming in. One of the major problems with regards to Land Bank's performance were due to its loan asset portfolio being funded entirely through short-term debt that was raised. The Land Bank business model must change in order to improve its ability of long-term capital raising instead of all the short-term loans that they obtained in recent years. I would like your comments about that. Due to the poor confidence in the Land Bank, farmers with the ability to pay back their loans preferred rather to obtain loans from other commercial banks. leaving the bank with a large number of remaining clients that are not able to repay their loans. What are your plans going forward with regards to that, to stop that curve? Then, Honorable Chairperson, I just want to go through my notes. With regards to the liability solution, did the bank meet the target date of 30 September 2022, finalized the liability solution? And what are the challenges, if any, with regards to the liability solution? Then a last issue is the effect of the Moody's credit rating agency downgrade on Land Bank. Obviously, this exacerbated the bank's problems and it made it difficult to raise new debt, especially given the current funding model. Now, the increased non-performing loans and increased impairments due to the deteriorated macroeconomic situation that we've got also contributes to Moody's and other credit rating agencies looking at the Land Bank and asking themselves, what will future ratings look like? Now, this is my question with regards to credit rating agencies. What do you think will be the future ratings of these credit agencies? And do you think that we will have, we'll see a better rating in the short or near future? Or do you think that we will remain on junk status with regards to Land Bank? A last thing from my side, Honorable Chairperson, is firstly, I want to congratulate Mr. Rikotso on his appointment. I think one of the problems that Land Bank had in the past is that there was no continuity with regards to appointments, especially with regards to the leadership. The CEOs were there for a year or two, resigned. Each CEO came in with his own plan. Each chief financial officer or chief operating officer came in with his own plan, and there was no continuity with that or a proper succession plan. We need to look into that. I wish you all of the best with the task that you've taken on, Mr. Rikotso, and hopefully you will be there and doing a good job for a much longer period than some of your predecessors had, because it really had a negative influence on the bank. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Okam. And then the next on my list is Honorable Ryder, followed by Honorable Tetweit, and then followed by Honorable Masango.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Quite difficult to follow such a excellent technical set of questions, but I'll approach things a little bit differently, probably. Thank you for the introduction, Ms. Nkosi. If you can perhaps give us, please, just an updated organigram. You did detail that there are now a number of permanent appointments that have been made and confirmed. I noted there wasn't an updated organigram in the presentation. If you can just send that via the secretariat in the next couple of days, please, that would be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. And I'm going to jump from the start right to the end and pick up a little bit on what Professor Kirsten was saying about the fact that the Land Bank is a DFI. And I think I've been on this committee almost 4 years now, and for almost 4 years, probably 3.5 years, every time the Land Bank comes here, we make the same point that the Land Bank needs to decide if it's a DFI or if it's a commercial entity, because it has been a DFI in name only, and its actions and activities and its strategies have pointed to the fact that it has been managed and run like a commercial entity. And I think that Prof. Kirsten made this point, and he emphasized that the Land Bank has been the architect of its own destruction over time, through bad decisions, bad leadership, etc. So we're sitting in a situation where the Land Bank is in dire straits, and yet, you know, and looking to government, looking to the shareholder for assistance at this stage, and yet, you know, much like many of the other state-owned enterprises, it is bad decisions that have been taken over time that have got us to where we are now. And I think, you know, Prof. Kirsten started on commenting on that. And Mr. Okamp hold out more salient details out of the research document, which confirmed bad decisions have got us to where we are. Now, Ms. Nkosi also spoke about the reputational damage that's happened. And the fact is that, you know, once you've angered people, once you've chased them away, it's incredibly difficult to get them back. And you know, trust is a terrible thing. Once it's been broken, to rebuild it is not easy. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. So we sit with a very difficult situation for the land bank, and the reality is that we've just appropriated an additional 5 billion rand to the land bank. If one looks at slide 21. Of the presentation today. And it says, problem statement, the bank cannot achieve its development effectiveness and financial sustainability with the current funding structure, which is predominantly funded from the debt market. Well, guess what? If you add up the 5 billion rand that we've given you now and the bailouts over the last couple of years, actually, ladies and gentlemen, the bank has received massive funding from government. And yet this appears to have been wasted through poor management. Okay. The next problem statement talks about, due to the current default position, the land bank is unable to raise debt funding in the market. The bank requires long-dated funding, etc. Something else that Mr. Okam picked up on. And the expensive cost of funding requires very high pricing. Okay. Confirming that you cannot be a DFI based on what you've presented to us today. Your model is flawed. And I understand, Mr. Ikotso, you are faced with a very difficult position, because in reality, sir, based on the presentation that has been presented to us today, the land bank should be winding down. You should be arranging to close your doors, because realistically, there is no future for the land bank by your own presentation, sir. So you know, it's very difficult to ask the turkeys to organize Christmas dinner, but Mr. Ikotso, what is the plan to take to close the doors of the land bank with a minimal impact on the state? Because at this stage, it appears that further bailouts from government is not going to happen, because I don't believe that the finance minister is happy with the model. I don't believe that anyone can be happy that there's a sustainable model, that there's a proper plan in place. It hasn't come through strongly in today's presentation, and really, I'm quite shocked, and I don't see a way out other than ultimately shutting the doors and winding the business down. That's the future I see for the land bank, which will be an absolute travesty, because farmers need proper funding and different blended funding from what a commercial entity can give them. But realistically, I don't see a plan that is actually worth funding, and I can't see Treasury being sold on this plan either. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair, if I may continue.
Yes, you may continue, Honourable Datwick.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, a lot of ground has been covered. I also appreciate the presentation. I want to know, it was said that the current scheme is not, the current model is not going to work. And it's common knowledge that in the past, the land bank borrowed money at a certain interest rate and then on-lent those funds at a subsidized interest rate. Are they still some of these deals in place where land bank basically subsidize the clients? If yes, can we get percentages and the amount of money that is involved there? And I want to know, Chair, with the land bank focusing on the funding from the West and borrowing from the West up to now, have they changed their scope? Are they looking towards the East? And the reason I'm asking this is because in one of the previous meetings, the Honourable Harim said that the government, South African government, is placing their focus more towards the East and to move away from the so-called West funding model. If you could have more information on that. So thank you, Chair. That's all at this stage.
Can I come in, Chair?
Thank you very much, Honorable Tetuit. Honorable Matangu.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to members and team Land Bank. Chairperson, let me join my colleagues by welcoming and appreciating the detailed presentation by the Land Bank. And I know that most of the time we are told not to praise a fish for swimming. I will choose to appreciate and praise the fish for swimming, because if it doesn't swim, we complain. Having started on that positive note, members have spoken to a number of issues that I wanted to raise, and some of the issues are recurring from our previous engagements. On slide nine, you're talking about liability. You have identified liability and solution. What I appreciate most is that you have solution as far as the liabilities are concerned, and you have a plan that is responding to the audit outcome, hence the clean audit. And one has to say thank you and well done for making sure that you get the clean audit. Hence, I'm one person that is not always convinced about the clean audit, but you have spoken that this clean audit speaks to the outcome or the output. And I'm convinced that this is what the Auditor General and ourselves and the country wants to see. Not just that we play with the numbers and get a clean audit. So the outcome or the output will have to speak for themselves. And also adding or emphasizing to what members have spoken to, the issue of the employment or of permanent employment of the senior management. I want to second or agree with the Honorable Ryder that it will be appreciated to have the organogram, which also speaks to demographics of the country, because we appreciate that you have employed. There's no more. We don't have Hollywood anymore or Nollywood. People are now employed permanently, and we expect a lot from them. But who are these other people apart from Mr. Rokotso and others? So we want to see if females have been considered. If not, what will be the reason? Also, the issue of youth, among others. You have also spoken about identifying a dissatisfaction of the lenders. I would like to know if in your response, if you have a plan of attending to those dissatisfaction of lenders, because from where I'm standing or from a layman's point, is that some of the dissatisfaction is about the red tape, the lack of knowledge, so to say. So I would like to know, what is it that you're doing as Land Bank, maybe through your website or your within within your operation? Do you have a program in as far as assisting these clients to deal with or to shorten, not really compromising your mandate or your services, giving information and assisting, so to say that are you reducing or have you reduced the red tape? I have also just a second, Chair, my apologies. I've taken notes, some notes here. What I'm going to say, I think it's something that relates to what the Honorable Okamp has said. But Honorable Okamp has spoken about the commercial farmers. And I'm not going to leave the commercial farmers out, because I want to believe that the small medium scale farmers are also, that is on slide 23 of your presentation, are gaining or are getting experience from the commercial farmers. So I would like to know that what is it specifically that you have in terms of making sure that the small farmers or the small scale farmers are also benefiting from these. Also on slide 29, you're saying the loan book is declining. Is this a good thing that the loan book is declining? Maybe if you can unpack it for me, I will understand. I will maybe have an understanding of what is it that needs to be done, or what does it mean? The issue that has been raised by Prof. I appreciate your concluding remarks, Prof. That acknowledging that and sharing with us, even though we have been there, some of us we know, like Honorable Ryder has said, that mistakes have been done, and this has put land bank at a negative side. And I would like to believe that, as you say, you are now attending to those things, and it's now giving you an opportunity to focus on them and address them. Okay, the most important or one of the important questions that I have is the breakdown in terms of the provinces. In as far as your delivery is concerned, members have spoken about a few provinces that are known, and we know that most of the provinces are agricultural. And my interest on this one is that how many provinces have benefited, and how far, at what scale have they benefited from this? Because for me is that the issue of the farmers, whether commercial or small or medium scale farmers, they contribute more on food security, and this is very, very important. And I'm talking to your slide on 16, which is shown by graphs. So it speaks only about males and females, but I would love to know, in as far as the provinces, which provinces have benefited, and are we, which criteria are we following? Because some of the provinces or some of the areas are prioritized due to natural disasters, but there are those that are not maybe affected by natural disasters, but they are farming. They are making they are farming to create jobs for young people, for women, and also for contributing to food security and the economy of the country. That is, I'll stop here, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you so much. Chairperson, I'm done. Nkululeko, is the chairperson on the platform?
We seem to have lost him, Ms. Mhlanga.
Thank you for that. I think you can just, he's still trying to reconnect. Is there another hand after me?
No, Chair, that you were the last hand.
Okay. Can I then request the team from Land Bank to respond to the questions from the members? Maybe starting with the chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much, honorable members, for those questions. I will kick off the responses and also request that my colleagues on the call assist in responding to some. Let me start off with the questions raised by Honorable Okump with respect to the non-performing loan situation. You're correct, Honorable Member, that there has been an increase significantly over the past few years in the non-performing loan ratio of the bank. This is due to a number of reasons. Firstly, we had a number of challenges in the sector, as you alluded to, with very difficult operating conditions that affected the ability of farmers to repay their loans. Secondly, when we insourced the loan portfolio from our intermediary partners, we realized that there were different forms of accounting for non-performance within the loan portfolio. So there was a readjustment, which the CFO alluded to in her presentation, when it came to how it is that we account for these. So many of these loans, upon review internally by the Land Bank, were readjusted from an accounting perspective, which further drove up the number. Now, when it comes to how we deal with non-performing loans within the Land Bank, we ultimately, as I indicated, really need to recoup the money that we do lend out to the sector. But in doing so, we do take a very, very patient approach. In fact, in the agricultural financing space, one would be hard-pressed to find a financier as patient as the Land Bank. When we do identify that a farmer is facing difficulties, we have a dedicated workout and restructuring team where we will engage with the farmer, we will restructure their loans, we will give them repayment holidays, we will even give them additional loans to plant further to remedy the situation at farm level. And after these efforts have failed, only then do we then pursue legal means. And in doing so, we continue engaging with the client. We continue to try and find solutions. Thereafter, the legal process then commences. Now, when we start this legal process, there comes a point where the matter is in court and it is very difficult for the Land Bank to intervene, as court processes are currently already underway. So we've had inquiries from a number of farmers that had been in default for a number of years, where there had been initiatives or attempts to remedy performance that had proven unsuccessful, and they find themselves within these legal processes. Now, these farmers come to the Land Bank and request that, you know, a review being conducted. However, we often find that at times it may be too late in the legal process. We do still try and intervene at that point, but it does become quite difficult. We are aware, Honourable Okump, of the allegations and the concerns that had been raised in the market around our heavy-handedness when it comes to collections. In the middle of last year, when these concerns came to the attention of the board, we engaged with all farmer associations where they tabled their concerns. They gave us specific clients that had been experiencing challenges. We followed up with these clients, and many of them have been dealt with through our workout and restructuring team. We are also aware, however, that there may be instances of wrongdoing on the part of our collectors, on the part of our legal team, and for those, we are looking into those. As I indicated in my presentation, we've instituted investigations to look into these allegations because we don't take it for granted that there may be some wrongdoing and we don't want to ignore that. When it comes to the breakdown of our non-performing loan book, the vast majority of non-performance is seen in the commercial book. So what we are seeing is commercial farmers constituting the vast majority of our non-performing loan ratio. And that is for the reasons that I indicated. Honorable members, I am aware of the research note that had been circulated, but I would like to correct that at no point did the bank turn away paying commercial customers in lieu of providing financing to transformation customers. This did not happen. What happened in 2020 was that the bank, given the state of default, stopped all lending activities to stabilize the book. This moratorium or hiatus, rather, applied to all of the bank's customers, and we have recently, as indicated, resumed lending activity across the lending portfolio, including to commercial customers as well. Secondly, let me address the matter raised by both Honorable Okump and Honorable Ryder regarding the bailouts that have been mentioned. Members are aware that financing institutions from time to time run into liquidity constraints. We've seen this globally with banks in the US, with banks in the EU, where from time to time there is a mismatch of assets and liabilities. This is what happened in the Land Bank in 2020. The National Treasury, as the bank's sole shareholder, came in and recapitalized the entity. The last recapitalization of the Land Bank by the shareholder had been 10 to 15 years prior to that. So there had been no recapitalization of the Land Bank in years prior to the default. Now, in 2020, 10 billion rands was appropriated to the Land Bank for this recapitalization. It has remained 10 billion rands and no additional appropriation has been made. The 5 billion rands that has flowed through in the current or in the previous financial year is part of that 10 billion rands. And this is meant to not only facilitate in the liability solution that we are concluding, but will also support the kickstarting of the development mandate. Now, you know, when we talk about the future of the Land Bank in light of these amounts and the funding model proposals that we're putting forward, it is obvious that there is still a big role for the Land Bank to play in the sector. There is a large contingent of emerging farmers and even commercial farmers that are underserviced by the commercial sector. This is where the Land Bank needs to come in. From a performance perspective, despite the fact that we continue to be in default, the Land Bank is one of the only state-owned enterprises that operates profitably, even at the operating level. We are one of the only SOEs to have a clean audit. We are really getting our house in order, and we do request that members really bear with us as we really seek to remedy the challenges that have been created over a very, very long period of time. Sydney, I will ask that you come in with respect to the question raised by Honorable Okump with respect to the fiscal transfers and the discussions with the National Treasury. I will also request that you come in with respect to maybe adding detail on the long-term funding that you indicated. Also to respond to Honorable Mahlangu's questions around the provincial breakdown and the spread of the blended finance book. Kansani, I request that you come in with respect to the credit rating question, as well as the question raised by Honorable Du Toit in terms of pricing. If those two colleagues can come in with respect to other questions relating to their areas as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Just one interruption, not interruption. Honorable Mahlangu will continue the final part of the meeting as I'm going in and out. So Honorable Mahlangu, as co-chair, we'll continue the last part of section of the meeting. Thank you. You may continue.
Thanks. It's Sydney reacting to the request from the chair for me to answer. So if I understood Honorable Ockham well, in regard to the issues of the net recoveries from defaulting clients, taking into account costs from a legal perspective, we will need to provide that. I won't be able to provide immediate numbers in that regard. So we'll do that as a written response to that question. As far as engagement with National Treasury are concerned around our funding model, indeed, that discussion did take place and it took place also with the board and senior leaders of National Treasury. That's why the suggestion for us to go through a proper business case to justify future allocations. And that will go through, as we've been advised, a budget process that the department will look at. And we're hoping that Honorable Ockham, that our motivation is going to be compelling. We think we do have a good strategy if the appropriate funding is appropriately engaged on. And so in terms of that business case, our intention is to ensure that there's an appropriate compelling case that the National Treasury and indeed other critical stakeholders would be comfortable that it is the right approach to go back to what Prof has covered in his comments to ensure that at least the bank, for it to be sustainable, it can have appropriate allocations over time. As far as the breakdown with regard to the facilities being approved and disbursed to provinces, Chair, we will also provide that big background breakdown through written response. But it is across the provinces that we're doing business. The extent to which the numbers indicate that will also come through in the form of written response. I'll pause there. I think that's what I was asked to address. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kansani.
Thank you, Chair. So I think starting with the pricing question, Chair, it is correct that the bank is sitting with a portion of our loans that were not optimally priced. And that's a legacy issue that we are dealing with. What we have done, however, early on was to review the pricing model to make sure that the bank prices appropriately. So from that time there hasn't been cross subsidization. What we try to do is to make sure that the loans are affordable, but also try to look at the financial sustainability of the bank. So in short, that issue has been addressed. Around the credit rating, I think given where the bank is, it would have always been difficult for any agency to give a favorable outcome. So the bank is currently working to stabilize itself, and I think this was covered extensively in the presentation, to cure the default. And once the bank has settled and ready to go back to market, we'll then reapply for the bank to be credit rated, essentially. I'll pause there, Chair. I hope I've answered the questions.
Thank you, Kansani. Let me also address the question around, you know, whether we'll be looking for funding from the East or the West. This is a question raised by Honorable Dutoit. Now, let me perhaps start off by indicating, Honorable Members, that ultimately from what we have presented in our presentation, what you can see is that the bank can operate sustainably over the medium term with the current resources that it has, with the current funding that it has. It is not a debt store. What we are saying, however, is that in 5 years' time, we will have to go back to recapitalize the entity. Now, the question becomes, do we go back to the market and follow the same model that we had been following historically, which ultimately leads us to applying the same business model that we had previously been? Or do we recapitalize the entity to allow it to function as an effective DFI? So the question is really about what kind of land bank do we want to see going forward? It is not about, it's not a question of whether we will collapse without this support from the fiscus. It is really about capacitating the entity to allow it to operate as we have seen the mandate dictate. Let me hand over to Prof. Kirsten and then over to you, Chair. Prof. Kirsten?
Thank you, Chair. Maybe on that point, I wanted to come in and maybe make another comment as well. And that's an important point you've made, is that the issue is really, does the state and the shareholders see the land bank as a commercial entity or as a DFI? And I think the members have asked the question and made the comment that we cannot be a DFI and act as if we're a commercial entity. So that is a fundamental issue that we need to address, and the legacy since 2002 brought us here, and that's why we need to change and redesign the funding model and the purpose. So, and again, it's very important to emphasize your point, Chair, that the funding provided to the land bank is not bailout as in the other SOEs. It is a process to move in this direction, to recapitalize the bank to become a sensible DFI. I also would like to use the opportunity to correct some of the perceptions or wrong perceptions by members that the bank's loan portfolio to farmers is largely white commercial farmers still at this day. And this common perception that the transformation agenda is moving the bank in a certain direction is ill-conceived and incorrect. This is not the case. You need to look at the book and you will see the reality. And the fundamental point that the chairs of the board also made is that many of the non-performing loans are from our commercial white farmers that in some cases refuse to engage with the bank, refuse to engage with their clients, refuse to submit their financial statements as per their contract, and therefore they get into a non-performing status. So I think that is some reality that we need to understand. But fundamentally, we also need to acknowledge that the task of the bank to move in the development space as it did in 1912, 1930 has not been happening because of the funding model, and that is what the bank needs to correct. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Professor. Honourable Members, let me also provide an opportunity to Ms. Mahat, who is the Chair of our Credit and Investment Committee. Thanks, Matani.
Thank you, Chair of the Board, and good morning to Honourable Members. So, Chair, I just wanted to go back to the questions that Honourable Okem raised earlier on, and because I don't want members to go back thinking that we are not a clearing bank. So a critical question that Honorable Okem raised is, what is the land bank doing to support clients that find themselves in difficulties? And I will just give you three examples. The first one is what you call a forbearance strategy, which is part of the NPL remediation strategy that was adopted by the board in March of 2022. Under the forbearance strategy, we work with our clients. We assess what the challenges that the clients are faced with, and we'll help them with whatever that is required by their business operations. And depending on what they require, it can be in the form of payment holidays, it can be in the form of debt consolidation, extension of loan terms. And to that effect, we have assisted our current clients to the tune of over 500 million rands. And another one, the second strategy is on the rehabilitation strategy. And again, there we are assisting clients that are underperforming. And again, we help them with restructuring and collections that are affordable. And to that extent, we have achieved the target that was have set for ourselves, and the target there was around 2 billion rands, which we have achieved. And the last important strategy is on the preservation strategy. There we are assisting our performing clients to continue to be performing. So Chair, I just didn't want the members to go back thinking that there is nothing that the bank is doing to help our existing clients. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mahato. Honorable Mashango, back to you. As indicated, for those questions that require us to go back and look at the data, we will provide our responses in writing to the committee. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I think you have tried a little best to answer to the questions, and I will give honorable members maybe a minute or so to make follow-ups on questions that they think were not answered. And starting with myself, the actual question that I think was not answered for me is whether you have a communication strategy, and does your communication strategy speak to your audience, being your clients? Does it help? Well, hence I spoke of your website, or are you in contact with those who have an interest? Because some might have an interest but not have the knowledge. They need the knowledge. Honorable members, can you raise your hand, please, if you want to make a follow-up on other issues that you think were not fully answered, and let's avoid the preambles if possible. Kululeke, will you assist me with
yes,
that?
Yes, Chair. I've got Mr. Okamp and Mr. Ryder.
Okay, Honorable Okamp.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yeah, I want to thank Ms. Nkosi and the team for the answers. We had quite a long discussion, and I think a lot of the questions have been answered. Coming back to assisting farmers, I know that Land Bank are doing a lot to assist farmers that are defaulting. My one question was specifically with regards to those instances that have already been handed over. Now, I know there's been touched on it, but again, as I said, the perception out there is that there is a heavy-handedness of a lot of the liquidators and attorneys, that once it has been handed over to them, they want to get that to an auction as soon as possible. Some of these lands are going for huge amounts on auctions, and they get a certain percentage thereof. So the quicker they can get it to an auction, the more money they can make. The problem with that is that the perception out there is that there is no feeling towards the farmer and his situation. We had a drought for 8 years. That drought has been broken. Some of those farmers in 8 years' time, whatever the renegotiation of terms or payment holidays was that they received, due to the drought and due to other circumstances, they just could not pay that back. Now that has been handed over to the attorneys and the liquidation process is ongoing. My question is, what is Land Bank doing exactly in those instances where heavy-handedness can be seen, or even if there is not heavy-handedness by an attorney or by a liquidator, but where a strategy of helping that farmer can maybe now succeed? What are they doing in those instances? Because a lot of the farmers that have spoken to us said that the moment that it's been handed over to the attorneys, they cannot make contact with Land Bank again. Land Bank does not come back to them, and they say that it's been handed over to the attorneys, it's out of their hands. So it's especially in those instances where a lot of farmers who made additional arrangements with Land Bank, and thank you to Land Bank for that, but they still defaulted on the new arrangements and now are in a position that they can maybe pay back. They've got grazing, they can carry on. What is the vision of Land Bank with regards to those specific people to maybe get them out of liquidation processes instead of just saying, well, this process went too far now and we've got to carry on with the legal process? There are a huge amount of farmers that are in that position that will have a huge effect on food security. It will have a huge effect on labor and the unemployment figures if those people aren't being helped. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Ocamp. Honorable Ryder.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Thanks for the responses. And I'm going to say noted. But realistically, and I wrote the question in the chat, Chairperson, we see a vision from the Land Bank. And I do think that the presentation needed to be appreciated because it was frank. But the question is, does Treasury share the same vision for the Land Bank? And does Treasury agree with Prof. Kirsten that they're going to continue giving capital funding, whether we call it bailouts or not? It's not really a question for Land Bank. It's a question for Treasury. I'd love to know perhaps if they've had discussions, what feelings they've received. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. I was going to allow Treasury to speak to that because we might not have in a very near future an opportunity to have Land Bank and Treasury in the same room. And I saw Mr. Ruzani just left. I think maybe he's disconnected. Is there anyone from Treasury on the platform who will want to speak to that?
Good morning, Chair.
Who's that? Oh, okay.
It's Lefense, it's Fense Radigaledi.
Okay, thank you.
I'm the director for the DFIs in National Treasury.
Okay.
Look, the aim of National Treasury or division of National Treasury is to see a more sustainable bank that will be able to support emerging farmers more, and this is basically what we've been actually discussing with Land Bank over the last year. And so we support the Land Bank that will be more of a development, which is a DFI. What we have actually asked Land Bank is to come with a business case that will actually show us how they want to take the Land Bank forward in terms of supporting that side of the market. And with that, we also requested Land Bank to develop a funding model, which will actually show how that will actually be funded, that program will actually be funded. And based on that, it will then be up to the Land Bank to apply to the National Treasury for any funding that they require. And obviously the budget process will dictate whether they are eventually able to actually fund the request of Land Bank. So one cannot preempt how that will actually evolve in terms of how Land Bank would actually be funded in the future. But the dependency here will actually come from how Land Bank presents its new business case with regards to the funding model and the support of a development, which actually talks in general and in some instances, most of the instances, to what the chairperson and the CEO and everyone else within the Land Bank have actually presented. So it gives us some form of confidence that we are beginning to see the Land Bank that is basically aligned to the vision of the National Treasury in terms of the future of the land bank when it comes to supporting the agriculture sector. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Team Treasury. I don't know if there's anyone else, but before I hand over to the chairperson to speak to the follow-up questions, Treasury, as a rep, you can check the chat group. We really take our committee serious. And we always encourage members to be presentable. And I think maybe you didn't know that you will speak. And this is one thing that will make members to say, no, we need to come physical so that, you know, we come to meetings being presentable. But I think it's understandable for now. But for next time, you must be forever ready if you are to appear here to be part of the meeting, the dress code. Thank you very much. Over to you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I will allow Mr. Sydney Soundy to address your question regarding the communication strategy. I have also, Honourable Okump, requested that Stephen Sibueng, who is our head of legal, to join us in the meeting. He is currently in the lobby, so I do request the organisers to admit him. I think it would be valuable for the committee to hear from our legal team how we deal with matters of legal collection and liquidations. So I've asked Stephen to join us after Sydney's feedback. Thank you, Honourable Members.
Thank you, Chair of Committee and Chair of Board. Yes, we do have a communication strategy, Honourable Member Mashang, which is premised on face-to-face engagement with clients, as well as through the website. We have contact details for the different provinces that clients can contact us. But I think where you are going with the question is what we have since experienced, that some of the clients actually do not have the level of knowledge in terms of the criteria, in terms of our norms and standards. And therefore, we are embarking on a process where we will have a regional radio engagement in order to ensure that we provide as much information as possible throughout, from regions as well as with regional, with the national broadcast platforms. But as far as information is concerned, there is availability of information. I think we just need to ensure that we get to as much reach as possible, and ensure that our officials on the ground reach out to the extent that we want to reach out. I think linked to that, you had also raised the issue where you wanted to know if we do have programs to assist some. We have instituted a pre- and post-support program, which is intended to ensure that the clients that we engage with can be given opportunities and alternatives to source support in as far as, for example, the preparation of business plans and information that is required for us to be able to assess transactions, and also to link them up with potential off-take partners. So that program is in place. It obviously still needs to be bedded down and increase the number of strategic partners that will provide assistance, both in terms of pre- and post-support. But it's already in place and it's already being implemented. So I'll pause there.
Thank you very much, Mr. Soundy. Mr. Sibueng, can you come in? Honorable members, Stephen Sibueng is the executive head of legal at the Land Bank. Mr. Sibueng, if you can take members through our legal approach, the concerns raised by the market regarding our heavy-handedness when it comes to collections, our interface with liquidators, as well as how we look at these processes in relation to defaulting customers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, everybody. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. Maybe let me start by indicating that from a land bank perspective, once a client is in default, it's really at the last resort, only a legal process will be instituted. Maybe before that, I must indicate that there is a specific department that looks after clients that are struggling. That's where the restructuring takes place. That's where the client gets to be assisted to make sure that they catch up or pay the arrears. Only as a last resort would those clients be handed over to legal to commence the process. Even with that process, we had specific instances where client came to negotiate settlements and all of that. We do concede to that, obviously, provided that all of that do make sense, that they will be able to repay. So the leeway that we do give, I think in comparison to other commercial banks, we are led to believe, or in fact, evidence has shown that we are more lenient than other commercial banks when it comes to our legal process, because we institute that at the last resort. Now, having said that, I know that there were allegations out in the market that we are aggressive, heavy-handedness, etc. We found that those specific allegations that we made were not correct or true, in the sense that there were two or three specific instances where, one, once that particular account was placed in liquidation, we found out, or we got information, or the liquidator received information that assets that form part of the security package for the bank are being dissipated, hidden away, and all of that. And that's why the liquidator and their team have had to act quickly to protect the assets of the creditors in that regard. In addition, in certain instances, we had to quickly go to court and get the what we call perfection order, where there is a general notarial bond to make sure that we secure those assets so that at the end, all the creditors are paid, particularly the secured creditors. So I know of two or three instances where those allegations were made. Our preliminary investigation revealed that that related to instances where those assets were being dissipated and the bank was going to be disadvantaged. And as a result, they had to act quickly to protect its position. In relation to our interaction with the liquidators, as you all know, these are appointed, obviously, by the Master of the High Court, and they act in accordance with the Insolvency Act. What normally happens is in the meeting of creditors, that's where we vote in terms of what must happen. So they don't represent Land Bank per se, but their function is to make sure that all creditors' interests are protected, and we all wait to hear what the liquidator is giving direction on what needs to happen in a particular estate that they're managing. So in as much as we do support the appointment of those liquidators as a creditor, but the final say or the appointment rests with the Master of the High Court. And our interaction is as a creditor and nothing beyond or less what we are entitled to as a creditor when it comes to the liquidation processes. Chair, I don't know if there is another point that I've missed, but I think I've covered what you asked me to cover.
No, I think you did try to cover the ground, and from the chairperson, she said whatever that needs further details in terms of data and other things, you will go back to your institution to consolidate that, and we will get that as members through the secretariat. Thank you very much for the responses. Chairperson, can I allow you to give parting words? We have come to the end of the meeting. Before I close, can I allow you to give parting words?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Perhaps before I start with my parting comments, just to expand on the points raised by our Head of Legal, despite the fact that, you know, we really do all in our power to ensure that our legal processes are conducive or aligned to our role as a DFI, there are instances that we remain concerned about. As I indicated in my section of the presentation, we don't take the concerns raised by the market lightly. We are re-evaluating our relationships with our attorneys externally. We are looking at the relationship between the bank and liquidators. We have instituted investigations both internally and externally to really make sure that our legal collections processes really allow for the fair treatment of clients. So when those findings are available, we will share them with the committee, really in an aim to improve this process. But Honorable Chair, let me thank the committee for its time today. We appreciate the insights shared. As indicated, we continue with the rebuilding of the land bank, the restructuring of the entity. We have a new strategy that is really closer aligned to the mandate. We are, as the board, really encouraged by the work conducted by our team in terms of improved financial and operating performance. We will continue on this path, but we really do require the support, not just of the National Treasury, but also of Parliament, as we really rebuild this from a really low base to ensure that we are able to effectively service the agricultural market and the areas in the sector that require the land bank most. So thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members. That's our story. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and to your team for availing yourself and sharing the information with us. I think this information is not only important to us as public reps, but also to those who are listening, because through the strains of Parliament, there are people who are following these discussions. And I want to really thank you. And the questions are representing our different constituencies, and everything that we have been saying is in the best interest of our people, our citizens, as we represent them. They sent us here to represent them. So thank you very much, and hope to hear from you through the Secretariat in as far as the request coming from members, even though they've been requested by individual members, but they represent the committee, issues of the organogram and other issues. So it's very important, and it's of our interest, and I think it's for public information, and it will also be appreciated if it's not there, that you can include it in your organogram so that whoever wants to see or to know about you, they can find such information in your website. Thank you so much, and I wish you all of the best. And never again will we be seeing Hollywood, anybody acting, because the impression is that the people who are acting are not, in most cases, able or brave enough to take actions or to take decisions. So please continue doing the good work, remain within your mandate, and serve the people of South Africa well. Thank you very much. Honorable members, thank you for having this time. And your participation, your contribution can only be appreciated and will make the people of this country better. Thank you so much. The meeting is closed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.